In this episode, I hike the Abrams Falls Trail, which is located in the Cades Cove section of Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Before I start with the trail description, I wanted to thank the new members of our listening community in India. As always, I appreciate the support of both international listeners as well as our U.S. podcast listeners. In most years, as winter starts, the frequency of my hiking activities tends to be reduced because I enjoy being inside in front of a fire where it's warm. However, I will strive to continue hiking all winter long this year, both for adventure and exercise. A quick update on some of my other interests, which I briefly mentioned in a previous episode. Shortly after moving to my new Tennessee home, I realized that I had black walnut trees and shagbark hickory trees on my property. This fall, I gathered some nuts from both to experiment with the processing and to determine their viability as a food source. I was rather late in harvesting the nuts, and because of my procrastination, the deer and squirrels had eaten most of the nut inventory on the ground. I'm a complete novice in doing this because I've never lived anywhere with nut trees before. I spent some time researching the topic on the web, but because of all the conflicting information I saw, I remained fairly confused. But I thought to myself, how hard could this be? Removing the outer husk on the hickory nuts was very easy. Removing the outer husk of the black walnuts was quite an ordeal. I won't go into the process that I used, but it did involve a bucket, water, and a hand drill with a paint mixer attachment. After removing the husks, I placed the nuts in a shed on my property to cure, as it was a cool, dry building and provided protection of my valuable nuts from the animals. Recently, I had time to crack the nuts and remove the nut meat. First, I started with the hickory nuts. They are extremely hard, and I couldn't crack them with my normal nut cracker, so I cracked them in a vise in my workshop. As I cracked them open, I was tantalized when I saw the nut meat, as it looked quite promising. However, as I removed the meat, I realized that there wasn't much of it, and it was very difficult to remove. Hickory nut meat is quite tasty, but I don't think that harvesting and processing the nut is worth it, so I'll probably just leave them for the squirrels next year. The black walnuts were even harder to crack. I started out using my vise on them, but then I resorted to whacking them with a hammer, which worked quite well. Black walnuts are much larger than shagbark hickory nuts. There was a substantial amount of nut meat in the black walnuts, and it wasn't easy to remove, but it's quite tasty. The taste is much stronger than English walnuts, but I really liked it. I will definitely harvest and process black walnuts next year, as I think the reward is worth the work involved. In the meantime, I'll try to investigate ways to make the processing easier. I also have many oak trees and maple trees on the property, so I'm going to try my hand at making acorn flour and maple syrup in the future. I'll let you know how that goes. As I mentioned, the Abrams Falls Trail is located in the Cades Cove area of the park. If you recall, I hiked the loop road there in Season 2, Episode 4. If you'd like to learn more about Cades Cove, I encourage you to go back and listen to that episode, as I'm not going to repeat the same background information on this episode. It's one of the falls highlighted on the park website. The falls is only 20 feet high, but should have a large volume of water. At least I hope so. As all of you in our listening community know, I was very disappointed in the volume of water at Rainbow Falls in the last episode. The trail and Abrams Creek are named after Cherokee Chief a skua. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. At some point in his life, he changed his name to Abram. Other than the references that the creek and trail are named after him, I can find very little information about him on the internet. His village was nearby. My hike today should be a lot of fun. During my hike, I'll pass over a wooden bridge, then very near the Elijah Oliver place, which is a preserved homestead. It looks like I'll have to rock hop over streams a few times as well. When I arrive at the falls, I should see a 100-foot-wide waterfalls plunging 20 feet. The trailhead is best accessed through the Townsend, Tennessee entrance to the park, but can also be accessed through the Gatlinburg entrance to the park. The length of the hike should be about 5 miles round trip. The elevation gain is only a little more than 600 feet, which shouldn't be too bad at all. However, this hike is rated moderate, mostly due to the terrain and the length of the hike. Interestingly enough, in doing my pre-hike research, I found an article on MSN that seems to have been republished from Backpacker Magazine that rated this trail as one of the most dangerous hikes in the U.S. After the hike, I'll let you know what I think about that. The park website does warn people not to climb on rocks near or on waterfalls in the park, and that several people have died doing so. I really look forward to my hike this morning. I'll check in with you during the halftime report. So I arrived at the trailhead at about 10:30 this morning. It's a cold December morning. It was in the 30s when I last checked. Probably a little bit warmer now. I suspect it's probably up in the 40s or higher. Did see ice crystals on the trail and the shaded areas. It did warm up as I hiked. I'm not sure if that was me generating body heat or the temperature rising. Probably both. I drove through the Cades Cove area of the park this morning to get here. It's very different than when I was in Cades Cove this summer. There were very few people here, mostly in cars, actually all in cars. Saw quite a few deer in the meadows in Cades Cove, including two bucks fighting, which was very interesting. I've never seen that before. Pretty cool. The trail conditions are basically good, but a little wet this morning. Must have had some rain. While the overall elevation gain is reasonable, you do go up and down mountains several times, so it's a little harder than you would think by reading most of the trail guides. A lot of nice scenery along the way. The trail runs close to a stream pretty much the entire way. Then at certain higher elevations, it departs from the stream, and then you can look down on it and get a wonderful view of it. There are a lot of sheer drops on the side of the trail, but you see that on pretty much all the trails in the Smokies. Met up with about a dozen or so hikers this morning, including two fly fishermen and waders. Hiking and waders must really be a challenge. There are several people here at the falls, taking a break like I am. To get here, you do cross several primitive bridges with the handrail on one side. At one point near the falls where you have to walk on slippery rocks, a cable is attached to the side of the trail so you don't fall. I use that for sure this morning. When you arrive at the fall, you'll get quite a treat. The waterfall isn't tall, but the volume of water coming over is tremendous, as you can hear in the background. And there's a beautiful pool of water and rocks at the bottom. It's actually one of the prettiest waterfalls I've hiked to in quite a while. There's a sign that says that 10 people have died here from drowning in dangerous water current. There is a very large, tempting pool, as I mentioned,
at the bottom of the falls, it must be more dangerous than it looks from here. Now I know why this trail is rated as one of the top 10 dangerous trails in America. I'm at the foot of the falls, soaking up its beauty and the warm sun. I'm gonna take a break and have a snack and drink some water and then start my return hike. I'll catch up with you on the wrap-up segment.
My return hike from Abrams Falls was nice, but uneventful. I passed a lot more hikers who were headed in the opposite direction and going to the falls. When I arrived at the parking lot, there was a striking difference in the number of cars in the parking lot. This morning there were only a few cars, but this afternoon the parking lot was nearly full. As far as facilities go, there are only pit toilets at the trailhead parking lot. My total hike today, according to my GPS watch, was 5.37 miles, a bit more than the advertised distance of 5 miles. This is a very nice hike, and I would recommend it to anyone who's comfortable with a 5-mile hike with a moderately difficult rating. Abrams Falls is quite beautiful. One bonus of this hike is that you get to tour Cades Cove on your ride to and from the trailhead. It is one of the most beautiful and tranquil areas of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Be aware that cell phone reception is extremely bad, if available at all, on this hike, in Cades Cove, and frankly in most areas of the park. But I think disconnecting is healthy for us. If you're planning to travel to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park this winter, please be aware that some of the roads in the park close for the winter. Many of those roads start closing in mid to late November, but a few close at the end of October. Those roads include Klingman's Dome Road, Roaring Fork Motor Nature Trail, Forge Creek Road, Parsons Branch Road, Rich Mountain Road, Straight Fork Road, Hintuga Round Bottom Road, and Hintuga Ridge Road. However, much of the park remains open during the winter, weather permitting. I would advise checking the park's website for closures before making plans for winter activities. As always, you can find photos and videos of my hikes, including this one, on Instagram. I'll post content to Instagram shortly after publishing this episode. My name there is Goosahikin, that's GOOSEAHIKIN. As I mentioned before, I would really like to know more about your hiking experiences and your ideas on future hikes. As a member of our hiking community, I value your input. Feel free to reach out to me on Instagram or X, formerly called Twitter. My X name is also Goosahikin. I have posted a link to the National Park Service website information on this trail in the show notes. My Instagram information can also be found in the show notes. When hiking, I sometimes use hiking poles, also called trekking poles, and sometimes I don't use them. There are many reasons to use them. When I do use them, I use them for three primary reasons. One, they help me keep my balance when rock hopping across streams and on longer backpacking hikes when I carry a heavy load. Two, when I am carrying a fully loaded backpack, they help me to reduce the shock and wear on my knees. And three, I also use them on day hikes if I think that the elevation gain and terrain might warrant the use of them. I've heard other people indicate that they use them to keep their arms busy when hiking. I also knew a fellow that had a tent that utilized hiking poles rather than tent poles. It was a very clever design. I've never used them for this, but it seems you could also use them to scare off animals by waving them or banging them together. I was using hiking poles during an Appalachian Trail hike in Virginia on Season 2, Episode 1, when I encountered a mother black bear and her cub. As my mind was racing during this encounter, in the back of my mind, I thought I might somehow use them to fend off Mama Bear if she attacked me. Luckily, that was not needed. You could also use them to see how deep water is in a stream or to test the strength of ice, though I would never recommend walking on a frozen stream, river, or lake, as I personally think that is extremely dangerous. A downside of using hiking poles is that they get in the way if you don't need them. Old-time traditional poles are very difficult to store in a backpack. That's why I got a set of telescoping poles that I can quickly place in a day pack or backpack when not needed. I think most, if not all, of the newer hiking poles are of the telescoping variety, because they can be adjusted for hikers of various heights. The ones I use telescope down to a very convenient size for storage. While most hiking poles are lightweight, if you're backpacking, you should consider the weight of everything in your backpack. It all adds up. And if you think that the conditions you will face do not warrant carrying the extra weight, then you might want to leave them at home. When I do use hiking poles, I always use a pair. But I've seen some people using only one. I also see a lot of people using a single wooden hiking pole. I actually have accumulated quite a few hiking poles over the years, including a couple of the wooden ones that I rarely use. I think that using a pair of hiking poles is by far the best way of gaining the most important benefits of them to me that I previously mentioned: keeping my balance when rock hopping on streams, reducing shock and wear on my knees on backpacking trips, keeping my balance and steady footing on challenging terrain. Before each hike, I try to do a little homework on the conditions that I'll face on my hike and make an informed decision about whether or not to use hiking poles on that particular hike. As I said before, sometimes I use them and sometimes I don't. Hiking poles come in a wide variety of prices, materials, and styles. They can be purchased at outdoor stores, online, and big box retailers that have a sporting goods section. I've also run across them at thrift stores, so you should be able to find a set to fit your needs regardless of your budget.
A final thought. Enjoying the great outdoors is exciting and fun, but don't engage in strenuous physical activities that are beyond your capabilities or your physical condition. Make sure you know what wildlife you may encounter on your journey so you can be prepared. Also, make sure that you carry an emergency medical kit, water, and a map. And always stay on the trail.